and welcome back to the Comic Lyra podcast, the podcast that does deep dives into the best, worst, and middest of comic books, graphic novels, and sometimes mangas. I'm your host, the soon-to-be-known-as Comic Stan, and with me, as always, is my sensational co-host, it's Jamie. Probably should use a different descriptive term. I left a very last minute, which we'll get into why, and I looked at the comic we're doing, and I was like, I'll just nick that.
That's appropriate.
Exactly. So, we are doing Sensational She-Hulk. Before we get into that, I think we should explain where we are right now while recording this episode.
Because if not, it's just going to be an elephant in the room.
Yes, and that elephant is both ill and been out last night. we're both a bit under the weather today for different reasons. You are legitimately, you're recovering from a legitimate illness.
Yeah, which led to me not having a voice for a week.
Which turns out, essential for podcasting.
Yeah, really useful.
It turns out, yeah.
So I still don't really have a voice, but I have like enough of a voice that we can do a podcast episode. So I apologize to our listeners for the state of my voice today.
I would say it doesn't warrant an apology because it's literally something you can't control.
Yeah, like, and you know, I think some people like the husky voice.
Don't know if it's a podcast thing or if it's like a blues singer thing specifically or not. I don't know. Depends. I myself, it's more self-inflicted, was out and about last night, but this was the only time we could do it, so we are pulling together and we are doing it for the fans.
We are recording nearly a week late, the day before release day. It is crunch time, but I must admit, one thing that really is getting me through this is that I liked the comic.
Well, we are about to get into that, because I've got a bit to say.
Did you not like it?
I'm not going that far, but okay. I've got a bit to say. The one thing I'll also point out is it will be a slightly shorter episode than usual for the reasons we just said. We don't think we can really talk and keep the energy up for as long as we normally do. And I'll also be editing this within that crunch time.
Literally overnight.
The aforementioned crunch time. So, we'll see how we get on.
If you're one of our like power users who like download and listen to our episodes on Monday when they go out, know that we were having this conversation barely 20 hours ago. Like we are committed to the craft.
I mean, the actual time wasn't even confirmed until earlier today. But we've both got our respective teas, so hopefully that'll get us through it. I think it'll give us the energy and the power and the calmness and all the things.
Put gin in mine, right?
I put gin in one of them and then I swapped them around a couple of times, so I don't know which has it in or not.
Gin roulette, I like it.
Yeah, you know, like with poison, you know, when you poison a cup but you don't remember which one you put it in.
Did you use your assassin's teapot and just forget which finger you put on which hole?
I thought the assassin's teapot was when you just knock someone in the back of the head with a teapot. Isn't that?
You could use it that way. No, have you seen an assassin's teapot?
I've heard of the concept. Yeah, there's like two spouts and you pour from different ways and it comes from different
one
parts.
Spout, you put your finger over two different holes on the handle and it pours from two different compartments. I feel like mixing the two near the Twainshaw mix.
I feel like it's such a delicate thing that most people I've met certainly would be like, hang on, which holes was I meant to hold again? And just accidentally kill the wrong person.
This was for assassins in the very messy part of Chinese history where they had emperors but also had warlords.
Right.
So these guys were probably fairly highly trained. It's not like our mate.
it wasn't the weekend intern who was like, oh, shucks, I got the wrong hole again. Sir, it happened again. Oh, that was a weird tangent. Anyway.
Sensational She-Hulk.
Sensational She-Hulk. Now, before we get into this, this was one we wanted to do just to kind of do a current one, get it in there for the end of the year, wrap up, you know, best of 2024.
I've wanted to talk about She-Hulk with you for ages.
Yes, a great character, a lot of great stuff. I've read some She-Hulk before, which I've really enjoyed. I think the one I enjoyed most was the Least She-Hulk title.
Right.
It was one that took place after Civil War II, in which she woke up from a coma she went into coma during a battle with Thanos.
Yeah.
And then when she woke up from the coma, she found out her cousin Bruce was dead and her, at the time, boyfriend James Rhodes was dead.
Yes, she told me about this.
So that title was very much a PTSD heavy, like introspective
Is James Rhodes
War Machine?
Yeah, fuck, yes. She was of James Rhodes.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of like mid-level characters that just always get around with each other because White is just like, these two are a couple now, like that kind of way.
And also, I suppose supers are kind of like celebrities, whereas like they can't date us mere mortals.
Oh yeah, are peasants? Absolutely, yeah, not. Because no.
Let's face it, She-Hulk would break a mortal man.
Mm. There's a great line. There was a great line in an Avengers comic where she's talking to Wolverine. And she's kind of being like friendly and like a little bit flirty. And Wolverine's like, yeah, I'm just so you know, I'm not interested. She's like, what? Like, is it a bit taken back? Like,
yeah,
you know, where's this coming from? I wasn't even doing that. And he's like, yeah, I heard you got with Tony Stark and I don't want his sloppy seconds or something like that. And she's proper like, who the fuck is telling people that I slept with Tony Stark? Like, Jesus Christ.
Did she sleep with Tony Stark?
I don't think so. But again, it's also that thing, on a long enough timeline, all superheroes have fucked each other. Like, that's just...
That's fantastic, isn't it?
It's good to know, isn't it?
Oh, I love it.
But yeah, that PTSD one I thought was really good, but yeah, it was very unlike She-Hulk title. So I don't want to say like this is the She-Hulk written at her best, because it's not. It's very different from what you would expect from a She-Hulk line.
Didn't they bring an element of that storyline into one of the films?
A little bit Hulk and She-Hulk characters always have a bit of dabbling of like, what kind of real world, like mental stuff can we use with the whole Hulk transformation? And
am I right in saying that She-Hulk got something on Disney recently?
Yeah, she had her own TV show, She-Hulk Attorney at Law, which
was it good?
It was all right. And I watched it and I say it was all right because there were some good bits, but there were also some lacking parts.
Okay.
For one thing, so this, one of the most egregious things about it is the whole point of it was she is a lawyer.
Yes.
Yeah. Come superhero. Like, yeah, she's kind of both those. And the problem was when they wrote the show, when they creating the show, the writers admitted that none of the writers on the show knew anything about law or courts or any of the legal stuff.
And they didn't get anybody in.
No, exactly. And it's evident in the show. And the problem is, like, it could still be good without that, but when you're literally, not only is she, the big part of her identity is she is a working lawyer
who
also has superpowers and does superhero stuff. That is, like, core Jennifer Walters part of identity.
Mm.
So when you can't include much of that because you don't have anyone to do that, that's like, why couldn't you?
I mean, all she has left is She-Hulk at that point.
Yeah, and they do some court stuff and some legal stuff, okay, but you can tell watching it's like, it's not what it should have been. No, it doesn't deliver on putting Attorney at Law in the title of the bloody show.
Yes.
What also doesn't help is that a lot of people thought, when it was kind of announced and being made, a lot of people thought it was going to be like Marvel version of Ally McBeal. Now, for anyone who's not old like us,
I don't know what Ally McBeal is.
So for anyone who's old or just doesn't know, Ally McBeal was like a TV show about a single lawyer who, like, a show about her like work in law and
right,
her personal relationships within law firm and that kind of stuff. It was, did you ever see, you know, Futurama? There was an episode
yes,
where there was an Earth TV show that was being broadcast out to the alien planet, but like 1,000-year delay.
Right.
And the show was like called Single Female Lawyer.
Yeah, and that it ended and they had to make another episode to keep them happy, right?
That was a parody on Ally McBeal. So the point was, it was a very popular show and it was that kind of like, she's a smart, independent woman, but also she just can't make it work in a love life. Like that kind of mix. And apparently that show, I didn't watch it, but I was like aware of it. That was like, it balanced those two things well.
Yes.
And people thought that was what She-Hulk was going to be. And then they were like, none of us know anything about the law. I was like, well, that's kind of important, isn't it?
The amount of money that Disney has and the amount of money that Disney's throwing at the shit, they could have just got a fucking parallel. Like, Marvel and Disney both employ many, many lawyers.
Yes.
They could have just thrown 20 quid at one of the paralegals.
I think the
problem, it wouldn't have, like, there would have been lawyers involved in the making of that show at every part of the process, right?
Yeah, you could have probably grabbed one of Disney's lawyers, but the problem was, it's like, if you're here, who's guarding hell? Like,
yeah, the problem is Disney's lawyers aren't good people.
No, not at all. But the other problem is the problem is, I don't think they even intended it to be law heavy.
Yes.
I think it.
But they called it Attorney at Law.
I don't know if that was, but that could have been changed at any point.
Yeah, absolutely.
That could have been like the day before release. They're like, actually, let's slip this in there because people expect it now.
Yeah.
But I don't think they ever intended it to be that. And that's more of like the kind of malaise of like middle of the line, like playing it safe kind of.
Yes.
They don't want to take, Disney especially don't like taking risks on stuff like that.
Yeah, totally.
So they're like, let's make a legal superhero show. People be like, well, they're expecting superhero stuff. So there needs to be superhero fights and costumes and blah, blah, blah. It's like, They because that's what's been successful before. They just want to do that again. Whereas the idea of like, well, if it's more of a legal show and it's different, they're like, different? People might not watch that.
People don't want like different.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and the then thing I think, is, I like the idea of a courtroom drama with Jen Walters at the center of it would be really cool.
And if you want superhero / court drama stuff, Daredevil,
I was about to say,
nails it. Like, yeah. They do really well. But yeah, and I think that, again, I think they changed the title at the end because they were trying to have their cake and eat it too. It's like, well, the show itself is very by the numbers, but if we put this little bit in the title, then that's a little bit of lore stuff. Yeah. Like, so yeah. Also, I didn't like the ending, which I don't know if you want me to get into. It's like the very end of the show.
We can table that discussion for another time.
That's fair, yeah. So yeah, otherwise, I've enjoyed some She-Hulk comics before, and I thought this one was interesting.
Okay.
What did you think of it overall?
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I mean, it helped that I am poorly. I was tired. I'm conscious that in the past few podcasts, I've really brought where I was at when I was reading the comic into my interpretation of it.
Yeah, I think that helps. I think that matters.
But it was comfy. It was sort of, you know, I really got the feeling that it was being written by millennials like me in 2024, which is nice. It was like millennials existing in the Gen Z world. And so I liked that. It was very much of my generation, but my generation as we currently exist and not as we were.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed.
It's probably a writer from our generation writing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you'd expect so, wouldn't you? I found it funny in places.
Yeah, yeah.
It made me laugh. There was a couple of times where it made me do the thing that I'm doing at the moment, which is trying to laugh and then wheezing.
Yes.
It made me laugh, wheeze, Ryan.
Which is the best when something's so funny that it's painful to laugh and you laugh anyway. That's a quite compliment, to be fair.
This laugh.
Yes, that's like, the one, yes.
I'm trying to make the noise and nothing's coming out. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't, narratively, it wasn't the most exciting thing in the world, but I'm a bit satiated with really, really high stakes superhero stuff.
Yeah, the
like
change.
We just had Wonder Woman and Spider-Man, didn't we? And so we've been reading really high stakes superhero stuff. And the stakes here were like a block of New York and two guys losing their apartment, not the entire world collapsing. And that was nice.
Yeah, it's good for a change of pace, especially. And this is, again, this is why I said the TV show should have been that as well.
Mm.
And the TV show even developed into like a, ooh, this is now high stakes stuff kind of thing. And it was like, you don't need to do that, I don't think. Like, you don't need to do it every time, especially.
Yeah.
My experience with this comic was, so we're doing the 7 issues that have come out.
Because that's all that exists.
That exists. But there is an interesting point in that, which I will address quickly before we get into the proper comic. Generally, I thought the first 2 issues I thought were a bit boring.
Yeah, totally.
And then after kind of issue 3, issue 4, it then found its groove of like what it should be a bit better. Generally, I will say, so I'm kind of not half, I'm kind of believing 2 things at the same time here. One is this is not for me, like this style, but I'm glad it exists. In the sense that this kind of like when it's more about interpersonal relationships and stuff, like that can work. This level of like, it's a bit Sex and the City, you get a bit, again, Ally McBeal, like it's a bit high school drama kind of thing. And that's just stuff I'm generally not into, but I'm glad, I think it's good that Marvel or any big franchise like diversifies their universe. It's like, we can do this stuff and we can do this stuff, and then we cater to all tastes. Like, this is the best way to get as many people on board as possible is do as much stuff as you can in like as many different ways as you can, especially when it's comics. Like, it's not like a series of films where they kind of have to be narratively and stylistically quite close to each other.
Yeah,
this is a line of comics of all different titles and variations and stuff do different stuff. So
no, I completely agree with you. It's more low stakes. It's a different type of fiction than what we usually see from comic books.
Yes.
But you're right. Like, it's nice that it exists, right? For what it's worth, I actually quite like it.
Yeah, and that's fair. And again, that's why I'm very careful my words. I don't want to go so far as to say I didn't like it because it's bad. I didn't like it because, not again, I don't want to say, I'm not even saying as strongly as I didn't like it.
It just wasn't
I enjoyed
for you.
It while I read it. Yeah. I just wouldn't continue it. I wouldn't
I think
pick
I might.
Up on it. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Which is wild, because usually when it comes to stuff from the big two, I'm like, oh, I'm not super interested in it.
Yeah. So there's one major thing I want to get across before we get into it properly, and that's I don't think came across for your reading at all. It's something in the background of the making of this comic that I just wanted to address. So this comic, so what was interesting was I read a She-Hulk comic like last year or the year before.
Okay.
And I read it and I had a similar kind of response where I was like, it's fine, but it's not for me. And I just dropped it.
Yeah.
Then when I was looking at comics that were coming out this year, I was like, oh, there's a new She-Hulk. So I wonder if it's better or worse than the one I read last. What I've since discovered is the She-Hulk that I read was written by the same person as this one. So what they did, and it's different artist. As far as I could tell looking at it, the art is not that different from the previous one. So what they've done is they started a She-Hulk title, and the plot of the one I read last year, which I wasn't that bothered about, was this character who we'll get into later, Jack of Hearts, turning up on She-Hulk's door. So when I started reading this one, I went, oh, is this the same comic I read? And so what's happened is they started a title, issue one, She-Hulk, 2022.
Yeah.
Did 15 issues of it. And then they've relaunched a new number one, but the same writer, different artist, but very similar artist.
So it's kind
style.
Of a sequel.
Well, this is what I'm thinking is, I wouldn't even say sequel. I think they shouldn't have bothered renumbering it.
It's a continuation of that run.
Yeah.
And I must admit, this was one of my complaints, is that I got a general sense that it was really quietly trying to tell me that without actually telling me.
Yeah.
Because there were constant references to things that had happened in that previous run, and they were saying,
yeah,
oh, you need to read issue whatever of this run to find out about this thing that we're referencing, right? And that's okay, but it felt as though it was more, I was reading it and I was like, oh, is this one for the comic book nerds? Because it kind of felt like, oh, this is assuming that I have a little bit more of an in-depth knowledge of like the past 5 years of Marvel than I maybe do.
Mm.
And actually it kind of put me at a point where I was like, well, I don't want to go and read all these other comics to make sense of this. I just want this to stand alone, right?
Yeah. So this is where I kind of take a bit more of an issue with it.
Yeah.
I don't think they should have relaunched it because evidently there's so much information from this series that wasn't even like a long, it wasn't even any time ago.
Yeah.
It literally, they just relaunched it. I don't know if there's any time between the last series and this series. I don't think they should have done it because there's so much information from the last one. It's like, why didn't you just keep it going? Like, why couldn't you just keep the numbers going?
And, yeah.
You know, the only evidence, the only sign of like why they would have changed it is because the artist changed. But again,
they change artists midstream all the time.
Exactly. They change writers like midstream. I've been thinking about this because it's actually kind of proposed this kind of
has it bothered
problem
you?
To, well, I was trying to decide like where do I stand?
Yes.
On, like where, like the question is, when should you renumber and relaunch a title?
Yeah, totally. And I suppose this comes up with Marvel and DC all the time because they're constantly rebooting.
Yes.
They're constantly retelling the same story and rebooting things. Yeah. But actually here, we're not getting a new origin story. They're not covering old ground again. They're not giving us a retelling or a new version of a She-Hulk story.
Mm.
They're continuing what already was.
Yes.
Because again, and it's you're so right, because as me, as a casual observer, I went into this, I liked it, I enjoyed it, but I spent a lot of it going, oh, I wonder what happened, what that's referencing and who these people are.
Yeah.
Actually, if they'd just said, this is a fucking sequel, I'd have gone, oh, cool, I've read an issue of this, I like it. I'm probably going to go read the read the prequel now,
but
I'll get back to this in a bit.
I don't even think it should have been a sequel. I think it should have just been a continuous run. And a prime example, because I remembered this happening with another title. It's a prime example of this isn't me and my opinion of just this comic.
Mm.
I read Daredevil by Chip Zdarsky, which is one of my favorite comic book runs I think I've ever read. They did the exact same thing there. There was one that started 2019. Mm. It went for like 30 issues. And then in 2022 or 21, they renumbered again.
Right.
Still Chip Zdarsky. So I don't know if the art has changed or not. I think it was very similar art. Again, I really like that run. I love both those runs. It should have just been one run.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have renumbered.
Do you think this might be a cynical ploy on behalf of Marvel?
Yes.
Because it's easier to sell somebody on issue one than it is issue 40.
100%. I was going to say exactly that. It's literally just, look, number one again. And it's like, okay, why? They did a particularly egregious version of this back in like 2019, I think.
Right.
Or even earlier. They relaunched as literally, the relaunch was called All New, All Different. Guess what two things it wasn't, or any of the
new ones. Or different.
They weren't new or different. They were continued. They were all number ones, but they were all the same story stuff. And here's the thing as well. I was trying to judge, like, when should you do it? Like, in this instance, they've changed artists, but the art is pretty much the same style.
Yeah.
And I think fairness to artists and writers, I should say the same for writers as well. If the writers changed, but the story is still entrenched in the stuff that happened previously,
totally.
Like this, even if it was a different writer, but they're still doing Jack of Hearts stuff that's it directly linked to what happened just a month or two ago in the previous, you know, air quote, previous line, then they shouldn't have renumbered either.
No.
I think a renumber should be either the, like, the story is a new story. It can be set in the same world and it can involve stuff from the previous line. And again,
but
this
actually
is
a new storyline involving new characters. Yeah. I'm there with you.
Yeah. This is all my opinion. This is what I think. This is how I think it should be. Doesn't
or even
make me
just
right.
A big shift in tone.
Yes.
Basically, this is going in the same direction that the previous run was going in, with the same writer and the same sort of, same characterization of the same characters. If you want to wildly recharacterize a character, you want to change some fundamental things about some characters, or you want to change it tonally or go in a different direction, then yeah, number one.
Yeah. I think if you're relaunching number one, it should be because either the writer's changed and it's a new story and everything, or the art style has drastically changed.
Yeah.
I think you can get away with like mild art change if the story is continuing the same. I mean, that's happened out of necessity on runs where just an artist will drop out or quit or be fired or whatever, and they just bring a new artist and they just kept going.
On some level, though, it has worked.
But I feel like I've been tricked, you know?
So we're an interesting use case, and our use case for comics is different than the average consumer.
Yeah.
Because we are talking about comic books, and because of that, we're always looking for something new. Because we always want to be talking about what's happening right now.
Yeah.
In this, you know, we talk about this weekly. It would become really stale if we only talked about older comic books. And so for our use case, then renumbering it meant that you found this brand new run, and I'm using air quotes, and said, oh, Jamie, you wanted to talk about She-Hulk for a while. We can talk about this one. But actually, so it's worked and it got us both to read it. But I've come away from that having sullied that experience, because if I'd have just known that this was a continuation of a run from 2 years ago, I would have bought that one as well.
Yes.
I got have bought and read both because I liked it.
Yeah. And we're a very specific case, because I'm like, let's do one that's started recently so we can do comics and do it for our end of year roundup.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the podcast.
Like, we're making cynical business decisions, creative choices, whatever you want to call them, about what we're reading. But also, so it was possibly the right idea for Marvel financially, but creatively, it's really actually hampered the way that I'm consuming this story and the way I'm enjoying it, right?
Yeah. But then again, when you have stuff like this, like if I wasn't doing this podcast at all and I thought, I'll try this She-Hulk run, I would feel, and this might just be me personally, I might be the only person in the world who feels this way, I would feel a bit cheated to be like, why, for exactly what I just said, like, why couldn't you just kept it going and I could have started at the real beginning of the story, well, not this fake beginning that you've just put a number one on.
Now that you've told me, I feel fucking cheated.
Yeah.
You're not the only one, bro.
Am I the only one having this thought in the first place?
Like, I will disagree with you when I think you're wrong.
Yes, we're well aware. Like, it's been noted.
Absolutely. I will disagree with you. I'm not afraid to do that, but I'm with you. I will die on this hill with you. That was a shitty thing for them to do.
So that out of the way, and important, but I might make that a comic stand video once they might be starting up soon.
I don't know.
That might be a good one. Like,
you've been teasing that for 2 years.
I'm the G.R.R. Martin of YouTube channels. It's not even started yet.
Like, I've been tempted to steal the comic stand YouTube channel off you just to indicate to you that you need to get on with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's coming soon. It depends what I make first, to be fair, but we'll see. But this I think would make a great topic. It's like, stop making number one issues or something.
Yeah,
like
totally.
That would be good.
Good clickbait title.
Yep. Got get them in.
What's the worst thing that Marvel have done?
All my videos are going to be new number one comic stand video issue episode one, and all the episodes just called episode one.
Fantastic.
I might actually do that. I think that'd be funny. Anyway, now we're getting into
So the actual story.
Shall I do a quick blurb of the people who are?
I think we're already balls deep in. I think this is a short episode. We're balls deep in. That's one of the things we can jettison.
Well, I'm just going to point out that the writer, Rainbow Rowell, and pencil and art, I guess, is Gavin Goodry, Emilio Lasso, Andres Genelet, and Ig Guerrera. So
awesome.
Yeah, those are the people who made it. Starting with the arting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say about it.
Neither do I. I was going to make 2 points. One was very Marvel House style, but different enough that it's better for this. There's more scenarios of people just talking and having conversations.
Yeah.
So it's more suited for that And it's, I think, a little less suited for the action scenes, which is fair enough because this is not what the title's for.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm concerned that this comic book is going to unlock a new kink in me.
Well, I was going to make the point, there's one thing I don't like is that, evident by what the kind of themes and the story is about, it's trying to make a lot of the characters sexy, which is fair enough because that is it's a kind of a romance story at the heart.
Yeah, totally.
The problem is when you introduce the Hulk in a character and try and make him sexy, I'm like, no, I don't like that. That's a bit weird.
You don't like sexy long haired Hulk?
That's definitely what they were going for. It just felt weird. I'm used to my Hulks being hulking, grotesque monsters. Like my favorite Hulk run, as I've mentioned many times, Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing. He's literally like a demon from hell, like, and drawn to look that way.
And here we've got emo Hulk with like, and it's kind of like Y2K emo long hair because it's like lank and black and kind of falls around his face in a double fringe.
He's kind of grunge Hulk. Grunge frontman Hulk.
It's like, he's like, I fucking hate the world, but also, do you want to come see my band on Friday night?
Yeah. I'm so alone. I have groupies or something. Like,
I'm so alone that I found four other guys who feel alone as me, as alone as me, and now we meet once a week to play guitars together.
Yes, exactly.
Like, yeah, totally.
My parents don't understand me. That was that.
Banner doesn't understand me.
Yes. Yeah, literally. I kind of had, even though the hair is different, it felt to me like Edward Cullen Hulk. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm so angry at the world. It's like, I wish I could use someone in my life.
I love it.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that aspect.
No. I mean, I thought it was a questionable character model, if I'm being honest with you. Particularly because Jen, or She-Hulk Jen, whatever you want to call her, her character model was so well thought out.
Yeah, yeah. Look, like, attention to detail. She looks exactly the part, very expressive, emotions and stuff, and always like in scale to other characters, she's big and hulking, but she's not a Hulk character, if that makes sense. She's always constantly been the between of like normal people and the Hulk. She's like right in the middle.
I feel like this comic book is specifically targeted to young men who just want a muscle mummy.
Yeah, yeah. There was a big thing where, do you ever see when Resident Evil came out a few years ago? It was Resident Evil Village. Yeah. And there was this character. I can't remember her name. People are screaming at Lady something.
Right.
And she was like 8 foot tall, like vampire woman kind of thing. And all the responses were immediately just like, step on me and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Like, there's a great Markiplier reaction where he's just doing like the full on like Looney Tunes, like eyes bulging, like ooh, ah, ooh, like that kind of stuff, which is fun. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is a sect of comic book fans who are definitely reading She-Hulk for that reason.
Oh, I mean, I would argue there are a sect of human beings who weren't comic book fans before that have gotten hold of this and gone, fuck yeah, I want some of that.
Yeah, and then maybe the writing kind of draws you in a bit.
Because the writing isn't bad.
Yeah.
So there are points where it is funny.
Yes.
There are, you know, I think that there's this moment where her boyfriend, who for reference, absorbs radioactive energy, but if he isn't completely full, he absorbs her energy when he touches her. And so she comes home from a long day at work and she says, oh, you're not touchable, are you? And he says, oh, don't worry, I drained a nuclear warhead for this.
Yeah. She's like, where? Wait, don't tell me.
Yeah, well, she was like, we'll table that conversation for later, because he's clearly
drinking someone's nukes.
Yeah, like, he's drinking somebody's nukes so that he can cuddle her. And, like, I would drink a nuke so I can cuddle you. Mm. Isn't that what we all want someone to say?
I mean, if it was North Korea, yes. Like, whose nukes?
I don't care whose nukes they are. Yeah. The fewer nukes we have in the world, Ryan, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, either or, if it... either no one should have them or everyone should have them. And I mean, like, everyone's back garden should have a silo, like that kind of level.
Fucking hell, Ryan.
Mutually assured destruction.
I'm really glad I don't have a back garden. You want to put a nuke in it?
Yeah, but someone, it's America's and they're just...
We talked about Fallout last week, Ryan. Do you not realize what happens?
Yeah, but now we're talking about gamma radiation. It's comic book stuff, isn't it? Those lines were funny. And they felt cute in the moment. Like, it kind of showed what their relationship is like, and that it showed the strain of their relationship with this whole not touchy thing. I don't know if there was like a metaphor for that, but I don't know if it was like trying to work out that what that would be, if that was like abstinence or something like that, or Or is it literally just a superhero thing that they're just using for a relationship dynamic?
I think you're right. And I think that's what's interesting about it, is that we have had every kind of romance story, right? Like, you know, there's that theory that there are only a very, very small number of stories. And every story is a retelling of one or some of them, in part or in whole. And so the idea of superhero romance stories means that there are added complications, right?
Yeah.
And so Spider-Man killing Mary Jane with his radioactive spidey cum.
Yeah, that one really bad comic.
Yeah.
That's a comic, like I was saying before, that one was objectively horrible.
Yeah, totally. But this is kind of cut from the same cloth. This is somebody imagining, we've got these two enhanced humans, and what would the complications of them having a romantic relationship be? And part of the charm for me of a romance story, and again, romance stories aren't something I consume vast quantities of, but I like a romance.
Mm.
I read a lot of Jane Austen when I was a student. I like a romance story.
Oh, Mr. Darcy. Is that the one? That him? Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, yes. Well done.
Give correct... one reference. I do declare that's not specific.
Prejudice.
Yeah. Ma, I have the vapors. That's probably not it either.
But I like a romance story when they're good.
Yes.
And I think actually looking at these two enhanced people and saying, what would the other complications be of them dating?
Yeah, yeah.
What, you know, part of the charm of a romance story is the tension and release.
Mm.
And so actually there being this intermittent tension between them that they can't always touch, I think that's interesting and it's kind of sexy.
I don't want to bring this up again because I'd bring this up a lot, but I do think the best version I've seen that in possibly all fiction was Human Target.
Yes.
That was such a great execution of that.
It's interesting because we're two like dudes who know each other quite well talking about stories. And sometimes it's really hard for me to be like, Ryan, this comic book's kind of sexy.
Yeah, that was. But that was a credit to the writing. It was meant to be the attention and release and... It wasn't sexy of like that. I think that word gets used rightfully so in the tense of like leering and like objectifying and that kind of thing. That Human Target especially was a will they, won't they, tension building, like that kind of stuff.
So I don't like to draw differences along gendered lines because it's 2024 and I don't really buy into the gender binary that much anymore. However, that kind of sexiness where it's about the domestic side and the tension.
Yeah.
That's kind of for the female gaze, not the male gaze. Really.
I think,
I mean, and again, I'm speaking in the most general terms here.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm conscious that everybody's different and we're all unique and gender's a fucking spectrum. Like I'm so aware of that. And that is my worldview.
Yeah. My thing is I say generally, and that is just, you know, it's general. It's when it's avoiding saying things like all men do this and all women do this.
Exactly.
Like
because that's just not true because all men doesn't even exist.
Yes.
Like, it's not a term that exists. However, that idea of like tension and like, you know, actually seeing the interpersonal side of a relationship play out, kind of sexy, more for the female gaze. If you're looking at something that is designed to trigger and elicit that response in quote unquote men, as much as that, you know, men even exist anymore, you're looking at something a little bit more overt.
Yeah.
See, what was that comic book we did about where the murder happened?
Where the body was?
Where the body was.
Yeah.
Where it's just fucking titties everywhere.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, bloody World Tree. Jesus.
Fuck me.
Can a woman put on clothes? Yes, once, and it's overalls, and they're not overall.
But again, like, so for me, I think the idea of, like, building a little bit of sexiness into it by characters having a bit of tension and, like, wanting each other but not being able to have each other all the time,
that's Romeo and Juliet, isn't it? Like, the core...
Yeah,
premise.
Absolutely. And that's kind of sexy and that's kind of interesting. Just showing me a bunch of illustrated titties isn't actually that interesting to me.
No.
But and so I kind of liked that element of it and I thought, oh, this is really nice. Like, this is a relationship between two young people playing out in a really fun, kind of believable way.
Yeah. It was especially appropriate because it's a fairly new, recent relationship as well. Problem is, for me, avid comic book reader, I see new relationships between characters all the time.
Yes.
Like, so it's the same thing with, like, characters dying. Like, we had this thing in the Justice League King Kong Godzilla thing.
Yeah.
I was like, Superman's dead, really.
Oh,
like,
yeah, fuck
bollocks,
off.
Is he? And you were like made the valid point of like they believe it in the moment.
Yeah.
But I we don't know what's happened within that universe, but I was like, he's died a bunch of times.
Yeah.
He's
totally.
Probably done that in this history. And again, with these characters, I've read enough comics about, like I mentioned earlier about James Rhodes and She-Hulk being a couple. More recently, it's James Rhodes and Captain Marvel.
Right.
And they have a...
He's moving on up in the world, isn't he?
Well...
He's trading up.
I mean, they have an issue thing because they've both got military backgrounds, so that's kind of like their shared kind of thing as well. But again...
Yes, sir.
But you just see all these characters. Also, James Rhodes, like, securing enough his masculinity to always get with women who could kill him with a single punch. Like,
yeah, because he's not enhanced, is he?
No, exactly.
Yeah, I like him.
Brave.
I rate him.
So... But again, so I see all these relationships like happen and disappear, start and end and all this kind of stuff. But it is the quality of the writing of when it's happening. And this was a much better version than I've seen in previous ones.
And don't get me wrong, the writing isn't perfect here.
No.
I didn't like the way... So Carol Saunders?
Danvers.
Carol Danvers. Captain Marvel. Yeah, Captain Marvel calls in Jen's friend. What's her name?
Hellcat? Patsy, Hellcat is the super name of Patsy or Trish.
Didn't like the way she was written.
I thought, to be fair, I think it was appropriate. I wasn't that fond of the character, but I think that was the point of it. Like they explicitly say things like, Carol Danvers doesn't like my energy, and she was like, I'm sure she doesn't think that. It's like she literally said, I don't like your energy.
She was good for comic relief,
yeah,
and she was funny, but. I just felt that we had all of these really well-drawn female characters, like Carol Danvers is very serious and very officious, and, you know, she gets shit done. She's very serious. She's very officious. She's in charge of the fucking Avengers. She took that job from Tony Stark.
Yep.
Like, she's cool. I like her. And then Jen is kind of balancing all this stuff, and we're watching her, like, be empowered in her relationship and fucking do her shit at work and Hulk out. Like, she's really cool. And then Hellcat turns up and it's like, oh, she's just chaos. She's just bottled chaos. And that's all that there is to her character. She felt a bit if I was just reading a Hellcat run, I think I would have really enjoyed her. But because she was sat beside two really well-drawn characters and characters
By drawn, do you mean like more, not the literal drawn, do you mean like depicted?
Yeah, or, absolutely. Yeah. Two
presented.
Yeah, two characters that had really thoughtful characterizations.
Yeah.
To then see this character that just was a bit more one note, she sort of fell a bit flat for me.
I would have agreed with you about that specifically up until the point where, so spoilers for the 7 issues, I think it's a short enough run and it's not story heavy enough that I don't think we worry about spoilers. We're going to talk about the story. It's still worth reading if you like that. It's
there isn't much story.
No, and exactly. But
there's not a lot of plot here.
That's not the point of, I think, these 7 issues, especially.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, but there's a bit where they're in this basement nightclub and it starts getting infested by demons from hell. Turns out Hellcat has died and gone to hell and come back.
Yeah.
And I did like they put a little bit of like, she's uncomfortable talking about that and reliving that kind of thing. So when the demons come up, it's like, oh no, the thing that she really doesn't like to talk about is happening physically in front of her. And she handles it well. She responds with like Danvers points out later, she's like, you were getting the civilians out of the way, like you were making a plan, you were telling us what to do kind
she
of thing.
She was talking about Avengers protocols, yes, wasn't exactly. she? And that's kind of her thing.
But what especially did it for me was it turns out the reason Demons Realm were coming up is because her ex-boyfriend, who is now the king of hell, character called Damon Hellstrom, he basically is like, yeah, they just happened to come out here and I came out to sort it out and to get him back. And she's like, you just happened, the demons just happened to come out in the nightclub, aren't they? And he's like, oh, I don't know. There was then this awkwardness between him and her because they used to be a thing. That, for me, that kind of then made her more of a deeper character.
And that was my favorite bit because... If anybody has ever actually sat and spoken to their ex and you go, yeah, I'm good. How are you? And you're like, you're good. And she's like, oh, your hair looks nice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have those conversations, don't you?
Yeah.
And I agree with you. That passage was good. I enjoyed that passage and I really related to it.
Yeah. And I think the instances like that, I really like, as you know, I said before about Jack Hart's radiation thing. Like, what is that a metaphor for? This was, I think, was a great example of taking superhero bollocks and then transposing into a normal everyday like real life situation. Is running into your ex and the awkward meeting, but in this it is the king of hell who's bringing demons back and they just happen to come out here and that kind of thing. I think that's a really good use of like mixing the two things.
Yeah, totally.
So they become intertwined so much that it's both genres mixed in well. Whereas old Jack Hart's thing feels like this superhero thing is putting a strain on a relationship, but it feels like side by side, like yes. Romance stuff and superhero stuff side by side. This one felt like intertwined.
It was more well integrated.
Yes. I've probably not said that well, but I'm trying to pour an opinion out of my mouth and hope it resembles something.
Hopefully the listeners also understand what you mean, because yes. I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
It was an expression of the thing that I was just talking about, but for you it was a more well integrated one.
Yes. Of the genres, the different genres specifically.
Yeah,
and
totally.
That is the point of this entire comic, and She-Hulk to an extent as a character is everyday struggles of life, and for a woman who we presume to be mid-30s, that kind of age, balancing the superhero stuff and the work life, romantic life stuff, this was like a good balance of it all together, I think.
So, yeah, it was. And I think I really liked it tonally. It really, in terms of tone, the whole thing really reminded me of Scott Pilgrim.
Yes, yep, I see what you mean there, yeah.
So for reference for the
reader.
Far
more likable character in She-Hulk.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Way more likable than Scott.
Yeah.
But in terms of just tonally, so when we introduce characters, one of the things that would happen in Scott Pilgrim is that there would be a little caption with the character and it'd be like, Scott Pilgrim totally doesn't know what's going on right now. And they did this with all the characters in Marvel.
Yeah.
And they were funny.
Yeah.
And that was really funny when Brian K. O'Malley did it in... Is it Brian K. O'Malley?
O'Malley, I think.
O'Malley.
Yeah.
When Brian K. O'Malley did it in Scott Pilgrim, and I think it was equally funny here.
Is it
here.
Brian K. O'Malley, or are you thinking Brian K. Vaughan?
I'm thinking of Brian K. Vaughan. It's Brian O'Malley, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Whoever the guy wrote Scott Pilgrim is, I like your work, mate. But it was funny here, and it was funny in a way that I'm not used to Marvel being funny.
Mm.
Like, you know, my experience of funny comics is either Spider-Man being quippy, generally not even that funny to me, or Deadpool.
Being quippy,
yeah. Right? Whereas this was like actually funny.
Yeah, the jokes were contextual. It wasn't a character just making a funny in the quiet moment or whatever, or in a battle scene, fight scene, whatever. This was like the jokes and the comments from the characters were all like relating to and commenting on the story and exposition as it was happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I actually find a bit galling about comic books sometimes is that they'll use this outside narratorial voice to try and create levity.
Yeah.
And so they'll have this narrator that's talking about the comic and it's like, he was the most powerful person I'd ever met and I didn't even know it yet. Do you know what I mean? And there's
that was specifically from something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was now, yeah.
And so all the way they're trying to amp up the drama and amp up the drama and amp up the drama and make us feel that this is important. Whereas this is like, they're just introducing characters and telling us a little joke about them and then they're in the story doing their thing.
Yeah.
And it just felt really casual. The tone was so right for me and what I want from this kind of story. And I think that really helped to balance the fact that, as I've said, there isn't a lot of plot here.
Yeah.
There isn't actually a lot going on, is there?
No. And it's, well, there's a lot going on for the character, not as much for the, it's weird. There's
a difference between plot and story.
Yes. We're so used to comics having this kind of like, the gem has been stolen and it's going to destroy the world if they don't get it back and get the MacGuffin. This is definitely a lot more like what's going on with Jen and her personal life and how is she dealing with it and those kind of things.
And again, you know, I think the fact that the events of the previous run, or earlier in the run, as we should start to refer to it.
Yeah.
So I can watch the vein in Ryan's neck start to go down a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not even that bothered by it. I thought it was more of like a necessary critique.
I know.
Marvel
I fully agree with you. Like, yeah. I wasn't aware of it.
I think there should be a comic that every issue was issue number one. They should just throw full hog as a big one on every issue.
You know, the one superhero that they could actually do that with is Deadpool.
No, you know what the one they should have done that for? The ones.
Oh,
that great comic from last year.
You have ruined my day. I was gonna make
a point about the what you said about the Scott Pilgrim introduction things and how they're doing here. What's interesting is I think the Scott Pilgrim ones were a reference/parody of Marvel and DC originally doing it in a serious way. So they would, I think back in the day, they would, like, especially like 80s, they would have those things come up, but they would be very dryly like, this is Adam Warlock. He's the perfect human created by the... I don't know why. I picked him. They'd be like, this is the thing. He's the monster, but part of the superhero team, Fantastic Four. So it'd be like a very dry, like, this is who the person is. I think, and I might be wrong about this, I have not read all comics that have ever come out, so I can't say for sure, but I think Scott Pilgrim kind of parodied that a little bit. So it's like, instead of superheroes and villains, it was like, here's so-and-so in the coffee shop. Like that,
and
was,
that's super cool, because now Marvel are having fun with it.
Exactly. And She-Hulk is the best one to incorporate that into.
Yeah, and I just thought tonally it really set it off. And then, you know, there's these really fun moments, like Punch Club.
So I get the concept behind it. I didn't like that.
I thought it was fun because it was just awkward.
It felt kind of dumb to me. Like
was kind of dumb, but it was fun.
The name especially was dumb to me.
Well, like, of course it was. Yeah. But you know what they're referencing, and we all know what they're referencing, and that makes it funny, right?
I think even regardless of that referencing, like if I was the thing or something, and they were like, "Hey, do you want to join this club called Punch Club?" I'd be like, "It's like that." I would never be part of a club that would call itself Punch Club. Like, I just, kind of cringe to me. Maybe it was meant to be.
For the listener, Ryan is a big Chuck Palahniuk fan.
I used to. I haven't read as much of his stuff now. Back in the day, I was, yeah.
This is how I feel every time you make a half-baked reference to one of the writers that I like.
I know. I'm all for parodies and stuff. Yeah. And funny quips of versions of names and stuff. Like, I'm all for that. It was just because it was so dumb as Punch Club. And I was like,
I thought it amused me. It tickled me.
It, for me, it was kind of like, how long did you spend naming this?
like 3 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. I get the kind of concept of it. There's characters who get, I think you could have done more with it. I think maybe they did in the previous run, but I think they could have done a bit more of like, hey, these characters like get relief from and release frustration by physically like punching stuff. We have that in real life. There's equal, like, what's it called? Stress rooms or
rage rooms, break rooms.
And apparently is a very good, like, there's nothing bad said about that. Like, everyone says they're good for what they do. You go in, you're pissed off of the world or your job or whatever, and you just smash a printer with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
So I get that, and I think they could have done more with that. But the fact that it was just called, like, we're Punch Club because we like punching things and it makes us feel good. It's like, you could have spent a little more time on that.
So, and again, I did what you sometimes do, which is headcanoned it a bit. And I was like, oh, well, it makes sense that, you know, like these guys fight for a living and they clearly like doing that. And the only people they can spar with are other enhanced people. And so they get together and have a little sparring session between the supers. And that's fun for them. And I get it.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of stuff in the Hulk conversation. So Hulk is in this fairly early on for some reason. I'm always confused, like, what Hulk we're getting at any point.
Yeah, do you know?
No idea. No. The last Hulk I read was... So I finished Immortal Hulk. That was like a couple of years ago. And I tried the Hulk series that came after that, which was so dumb. It was this really dumb thing of, like, the Hulk was being the Hulk. And Bruce Banner, in his mind, had created a mental thing where he was like a Star Trek captain piloting the Hulk. And that was like how he mentally like viewed it now.
Like that Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And that was, I read like 2 issues and I was like, this is stupid. Like, this is, especially if it in a vacuum, maybe I would have viewed it a little better, but coming off Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing, which ended quite messily, but still tonally was like hit so well.
Tonally, it was super interesting, wasn't it?
To come off that and then get into this, I was like, this is dumb. So I haven't read Hulk for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key thing here is we can talk. I mean, we both know enough about Hulk to be able to talk about what type of Hulk we have.
Yeah.
We have an articular Hulk.
Yes.
Hulk is sometimes nonverbal, sometimes he can talk. Here we have a relatively articulate Hulk.
Still quite angry and smashy.
But not the most angry and smashy.
No, nowhere near.
Like, sometimes you get a Hulk where he hulks out and all he can do is smash.
Yes.
And then once he's done smashing, he calms down and Banner takes back over. We've got a Hulk who's able to still be hulky, but sit and have a conversation and be reflective.
Yes. It was very interesting. I don't know if this is related to what the Hulk series is doing right now, but it's interesting he commented that Banner's gone. And that was very interesting. And it was interesting for She-Hulk to be like, she was a bit distraught. She was a bit like, oh, what? Banner's gone kind of thing. And I, my headcanon, I think she didn't believe it. But she wasn't going to be like, you're wrong. She'd like, that's what he's saying right now. And
yeah, I mean, I and when I read that, just looking at her dialogue, I'm right there with you.
Because this has happened a bunch of times. It's like,
it felt to me that she was sort of going, right, this happens a lot. There's
just
going to
play
no
along
point,
for now.
No point in arguing with the Hulk, right?
Yeah.
Like, why would I bother arguing with the Hulk? He's just going to get more angry and stay Hulky. What she actually did was try to calm him down.
Yes.
And so she went, well, if I just let him calm down, he might turn back into Banner, right? Yes. I mean, and again, because we didn't get a fucking running play-by-play as to every thought that was going through Jen's head while we're reading this, we can't be sure. But it gave us space to imagine what was going on in this story, and it gave us space to imagine her complexly.
And I've made this point before in a less articulate way, but I said when a story gives you room for headcanon, but it's not required, I think, the sweet spot. It's like,
I remember that.
Because when you create that in your head, that actually, I think, that creates a connection with the title, because you're invested in it to fill in the blanks yourself, but it's not a plot hole where you have to be like, oh, well, I'm sure it was because of this. Like, you don't have to fill in the blanks.
We were able to read it. I mean, and what's interesting is we got to largely the same point in our reading, but just with slightly different outcomes. You know, you're sort of saying, oh, well, she doesn't really believe him. And I'm like, well, maybe she does believe him, but actually she's trying to appease the Hulk and calm him down so he turns back into Banner.
Mm.
What we see is her actually get the Hulk to sit down and have a quiet conversation with her and stop smashing things.
Yes.
And that's what we needed to know about that character.
Yeah.
Is that actually...
She's a de-escalator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's a great de-escalator and she's really, really good at managing people.
Because she's a lawyer.
Because she's a lawyer and that's what she does. She is mindful and purposeful in the way she speaks. And so, yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Like, we, even though we came away from it with different perceptions of why she was doing this thing, we both recognized what the character was doing and what it's telling us about this character.
Mm.
And so on that level, I think this is a really well-presented story.
And another aspect which I had, I don't know if it was different to yours, but I thought she was speaking to the Hulk, not solely to calm him down and get Banner back, but also to actually, or maybe that was the intention originally, but I think it developed into cultivating the relationship with the Hulk persona.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think whether she believes, because again, this is a whole, if you read Immortal Hulk and stuff, or even any other Hulk title, you see that they're strictly separate personalities. Whether she knows that or not, or believes that or not, but she did seem to be like, whether she was trying to bond with the Hulk persona, or she was bonding with Banner in Hulk form, I think can go either way. Like,
yes.
It depends what she believes, and we don't know, but we don't need to know.
But it's interesting, because the one thing that she does is acknowledge that they're separate people. So
yes.
She says, oh, Banner's my family, I care about him. And then she looked at him and went, but you're also kind of my family too.
Yeah.
And so she's acknowledging him and she's, you know, she makes the fucking Hulk feel seen. That's amazing.
Yes. But again, we don't know, does she believe that, or is she
lawyering
him? Is she reinforcing what his very explicitly stated, Banner's gone, only Hulk now.
Yeah.
So she, like, you're not going to be like, actually, I'm going to correct you on that.
Yeah,
totally. You're DSing. You're going to be like, yeah, no, I agree. We don't know if she actually agrees or if she's playing along. By the way, she's still doing it for someone she cares about. It's whether you think, is it one person or two people in one body kind of thing.
So I think we need to kind of barrel towards the ending.
Yeah, sure. I was going to make a point to say very quickly, I think the Hulk conversation, I think for me, was when I thought, oh, there is something more here. And that was end of issue two, maybe issue three. But that was the point where I went, oh, there is actually some good writing here.
Yeah, totally.
Because everything before that was felt by the numbers.
Those first couple issues weren't as exciting, were they?
A Hulk character has turned up who stole someone's blood before in the last run, the last separate run.
And that just felt a bit superhero shenanigan-y, didn't it?
Yes, but it led to the Hulk conversation, and that I made the note of. That was, I think, the first thing I made note of liking. I was like, I like this conversation, and then it got better from there. So just want to point that out.
So I don't like the way that sort of issue 7 wrapped up.
I don't like, there's a big contrivance that I don't like in this.
Yeah, me too.
Which, I don't know if it's the same one. It's that I didn't like that of all the places,
yes,
they happen to run into this person from Jack of Hearts past.
Would you like to take the floor on this one then? Because I mean, right there with you.
It's just exactly that, isn't it? They go to this resort that seems to be right, it's like right close to the sun. And the whole point is they're going because the radiation means Jack will be fully charged the entire time.
Yeah.
She-Hulk's immune from the sun's radiation. They can just have a weekend away.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, wouldn't you bloody know her, of all the places, woman from Jack of Hearts past is there as well.
Yeah.
And I think I liked the story and the depth and stuff that they had post that.
Yeah.
But I could not forgive the, what are the bloody odds? I think that kind of soured it a little bit for me. And maybe I'm just being like,
no,
a pedantic asshole comic book reader. Like, I don't like that.
I fully agree with you. And the fact that they then, you know, sort of, she went down to the bar in her nice dress and has a conversation where she can...
happened to be talking to that same person.
Yeah, she consoles his ex-girlfriend, and then he walks down and then he just fucking ditches her for the ex-girlfriend, who's also been hired to kill her. It's just all a bit contrived, isn't it? And it bothered me because it was doing so well.
I think that's the pitfalls of the genre, specifically the Marvel, DC, big two superhero genre.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe it's a little bit lazy writing because you see that in a bunch of other stuff as well. I've watched films and TV where I go, what are the odds that they would run into each other? Sometimes you get films and TV shows that are built on those kind of like, what are the odds kind of things. Like Tarantino has a lot of like, I'm pulling an example out of my ass, but Tarantino has a lot of like, what are the odds that, was in Pulp Fiction, Butch is in the car and he sees the mob boss who he's running away from crossing in front of him. But I think those are built on like, don't worry, it's a unrealistic story already.
Yeah.
Maybe we should extend that same courtesy to this world of superheroes and I don't know.
Do you know what though? She is being paid by a guy who She-Hulk like destroyed his horde or something, his army.
Yes.
She is being paid by a guy to kill her, right? Yeah. It would not have been hard for them to have invented a reason. Basically, all they needed to do was show us the meeting happening where he hires her.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, before the events, and then she fucking shows up while they're on holiday because they're off planet to assassinate her.
Yeah.
And then sits in the bar and talks with her. And then she finds out that actually it's her ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend, right? That I would have been fine with that.
And you know, that is better. Like, absolutely. Even that, because we're trying to fix this that's happened, even that has the contrivance of what are the odds the person hired to kill She-Hulk is Jack of Hearts' ex.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a contrivance there, but all they needed to do.
They could have got a lot better.
Yeah. All that they would need to change is to make it so that this, what's her name?
Oh, I wrote it down. And even when I wrote it down, I was like, am I getting this right?
have I copied this down from the comic book right?
I mean, I got the spelling correct. I was like, I don't know how to say it. I read as Ganymede or Ganymede.
Maybe.
Also tried to get that other Hulk woman's name.
Yeah.
Did you know? Could you read it?
No.
Like an anathema.
Yeah.
Or
anathema.
Anathema, maybe. Like there's two names. I was just like, I have no idea.
But she had a normal English name, didn't she?
Yeah, so I can't remember it now. I didn't know that down.
But so Ganymede.
Yeah, sure. Let's call it Ganny.
All they needed to do was have Ganny track She-Hulk to that resort.
Yeah. That would have been less contrived.
Yeah, I'd have been all into it. I'd have been like, fuck, Boba Fett's just turned up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's an assassin now. This is great.
And it would, to make it even less contrived, maybe zero contrivance, if she took the job and the contract because she knew that She-Hulk was with Jack of Hearts.
Yeah.
So you could have got a similar story in the same place, but yeah, you could have like followed the situation naturally rather than... What? They're just all in the same resort at the same time.
Because the reason they give us for them all being in the same resort is that her new boss likes the prawn cocktails there.
Yes. Who is very adamant about it, which I did like a little bit of like, I like when they put dumb human stuff on like alien characters who to humanize them and all that. But yeah. Oh, I had the exact same thought and maybe it gets better from there. Like, you can't expect any comic run or anything to be perfect. So.
No. And again, we've both outlined some issues we had with this.
Yeah.
But this isn't like Spider-Man Multiverse of Madness where we are just thumping on it from a great height.
No.
Like, this was largely enjoyable. I think if you are up for a sort of millennial
Is there a genre name for this? Because I was trying to think of this earlier. Because there's some mangas that do this kind of genre, isn't there? Like high school or young teen, like, or, you know, young adult, interpersonal like, stories. That
like
kind
a
of
drama?
Yeah. Is there's a... Ooh, hang on. I'm going to search it because I do want to get the name. I remember that it was used to describe Scott Pilgrim because that was like a Western version of it. So I'm just going to quickly look at it to see if I can find that. Couldn't find the term that I was thinking of. I think I confused it with just a general manga term. The best to describe it is just romantic story, comedy, rom-com, like comic form, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, there's some drama here.
I did note some lines that I liked that I thought were funny.
Yeah, go mainly for
two.
It.
One was, so I always like in this kind of stuff where they do superheroes or supervillains full in costume in a waiting room of a law office. Like that trope. There's two characters. What are they called? The opposite of the Eternals. I can't remember the term now. It was something like, I can't remember the term now, but there was two characters. They're talking about their living situation and she asked about employment. And one of them says, Ransack is between commitments, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
There's also a part where the Hulk is smashing up New York and a bunch of people are filming on their phones and someone shouts from the side, I'll give you something to smash.
Yes.
So great little lines. Really fleshed out the world.
Oh, yeah. No, there was some funny moments. Like I really liked where the guy said he was between commitments. Said, oh, I've actually been doing some light telephone work. Like I've been doing call center work or stuff that I can do remotely though, because nobody wants me showing up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really funny. I thought their whole storyline was funny. Their whole subplot was really funny.
Nice little thing.
Yeah. And again, you know, there were these funny moments and there was quite a lot of humor woven into it. Overall, I quite liked it, Ryan.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for while I read it. I don't think for me, like I said before, it's not one I would continue.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good version of this genre of story or the genre of comics or whatever. So I would recommend if you like this kind of thing, I would recommend it to someone who likes this.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think that's we've done good for all our physical limitations right now and our mental limitations as always. And I think you should take us home.
Yeah, so thank you so much for listening. This episode was real challenge to make and I'm so glad we got it done. If you want to hear more from us, we have a YouTube channel, it's Comic Literate Podcast. We're also on TikTok. You can email us comicliterate@gmail.com. But most importantly, just thank you so much for listening and enjoying the episode. Have a wonderful day.
Next week, a different thing.
Next week, a different
thing. Once we get there. So, yep. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.